Welcome to the Barth Calderone Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. How are you? And welcome to joining me today to talk about the new and wonderful Corporate Transparency Act. So, as Paul indicated, it's a big deal. But I hope that after the hour that we spend together today, you'll have a better understanding of parts of it that are simple, parts of it that are complex, and issues that are associated with this new, very intrusive, and actually quite significant law. Why did it come about? It came about because the government was considered governmental. It's managed by FinCEN. FinCEN is the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. It's a division of the Department of Treasury, and it's designed, guys and girls, to deal with offshore bank accounts and now the administration of the Corporate Transparency Act. Corporate Transparency Act, they've been trying to do this since 9/11. To try to find what's behind the veil of all the different companies throughout America. And they're trying to determine who the owners are. They're trying to eliminate financing for terrorists, money laundering, tax evasion, and other financial crimes. Hi, Jay, how are you? That are associated with this. So it's any other illicit activity that is done through anonymous shell and or front companies came down to the Pandora Papers. So we got this act. Now, the act unto itself, just so you know, there is a bill pending in Congress right now to extend some of the time frames that we're going to talk about today. Along with it, there is a more draconian aspect in the bill that's moving through Congress. I will give you the time limits as they appear today as well. And there is a court case that is meandering around through the federal system, which the goal of that court case is to have the Corporate Transparency Act declared unconstitutional. Now, there are numerous reasons for the declaration of unconstitutionality, some of which may fly, some of which may not. My personal opinion is that most of the Corporate Transparency Act that we'll learn about today is here to stay. Why? Because it's been adopted in some form or another throughout all the modern Western economies in Europe, pretty much most of the modern economies that are in Asia. And even today in banking and in venture capital transactions, we've had for the last number of years something you've all heard about, know your client, KYC. So they want to, you know, check out who you are. They want to know who they're dealing with. All right. And we also even do a simple notary today. We have name, address, and driver's license. So these things are all there. And this is the same thing on steroids. The problem and another issue of constitutionality is that there are penalties associated with not complying with this act. So let's bring those out right away, because I think it's critical that everybody knows them. Once you are required to file. Should you not file, it's $500 a day penalty, all right? The maximum of 30 days, about $15,000. And to boot, up to 2 years in jail. So it's a felony not to comply with the Corporate Transparency Act. I think that's very important as a backdrop as we move forward. This is not, you know, shoulda, coulda, woulda. This is a mandate by the government. It was supposed to go into effect in 2021. It was postponed to 2022, postponed again in 2023. But here we are, here and now in 2024, and it is in effect. So let's talk a little bit about what it is. And let's also draw a dividing line. So a dividing line, there are 33 million small businesses in America that are going to be subject to this act. 33 million. And that's every corporation, every LLC, every limited partnership, every LLP, every LLLP. So if we got to go to the state of Texas, Jay, and say, hey, look, we want to form this entity, unless there's an exemption, it is subject to the Corporate Transparency Act. So it's very, very, very broad. And what's very important in understanding, which will help us all today understand what's going on, is that the goal here is to find out who are the human beings behind the entity. Now, the registry that's being compiled is maintained at the Department of Treasury. It is not a public registry. So if we have an LLC, for example, in Wyoming, that does not publish who the managers and members are, that privacy still remains. This is for governmental use for financial crimes enforcement, allegedly. We don't know how government works. And it's to be shared only within government and enforcement. And it can be shared, believe it or not, with a foreign government. So if there's an issue between, the UK and the US, they can share the information of who's behind this entity that may be transacting business in Britain. So it affects just about everybody. And the other thing to understand, this was targeted for small businesses. This is targeted for all the things that my firm does for a living. In estate planning, we use LLCs. We do various different companies. All right. And we do a lot of entities that are done for protection of assets and the claims of, to protect you from the claims of third-party creditors. And so every one of these structures is now a structure that is more likely than not subject to the Corporate Transparency Act. All right. So the Corporate Transparency Act begins with, let's see who's not subject to the Corporate Transparency Act. There are 23 exemptions for companies that do not need to comply with CTA. So let's go through that, because once we see that we are complying or have to comply, then we'll go to the next step and saying, how do we comply? And as all government acts go, some of it really gets confusing, and hopefully we'll make it a little simpler today.
And Harry, I just want to say welcome to Jay. Jay Holstein is, for all of you here, is a Vistage chair in Texas doing some great things. Jay, I know you've got members and you've got your thumb on the pulse of what your members are doing, and wanted to really partner with us to bring this message out as a value add to your practice. So Jay, thanks.
Well, absolutely. Thank you. And I do appreciate this opportunity to chat with you, Harry. And at our last meeting, we had, I mentioned that I was going to be doing this webinar, and I shared with them in a very much a layman's way what I anticipated we would be talking about. And what was really nice is the group put together several questions that I'd love to run by you and just kind of have a little bit of interaction back and forth. And you were sharing some really valuable content. I don't want to get in the way of that, but I also want to get a chance to run by questions that my group has, as well as questions that others that are on this Zoom channel may have.
Absolutely. So how about from a logistical point of view, let me get through what it's all about and what compliance looks like, and then I'll make sure that we have adequate time to do the questions and answers.
Perfect.
Because I think it'll be helpful. Otherwise, they're kind of in an abstract and not put into appropriate place. So let me get going here. Let's talk about who's not subject to this. All right. So public companies, company that's gone public, not subject to the Corporate Transparency Act. SEC registered investment advisories, which was they registered with the SEC, not subject to the Corporate Transparency Act. Venture capital fund advisors are exempt. Insurance companies and insurance producers are exempt. Highly regulated financial service companies like banks, credit unions, registered securities brokers and dealers, and perhaps trusts. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Public accounting firms, CPA firms, are not subject as long as they're registered under Sarbanes-Oxley. They don't have to report. Tax-exempt entities like nonprofit organizations, political organizations, entities assisting nonprofits are exempt. Governmental authorities are exempt. And subsidiaries of exempt companies are exempt as well. And the one that's going to impact most of the Vistage people, you know, I've been the Vistage speaker 15 years, as you know, and it is the what we call the large company exemption. And it's an and, not an or. So if the firm is located in the United States, if the firm has 20 or more full-time employees as determined by state law, and the firm has over $5 million of gross sales, it is exempt from reporting under the CTA. But all of our real estate LLCs, our stock sponsored cash LLCs, LPs that are used, LCs that are general partners are all going to be subject to the act. So now we have Jay and Paul Co., an LLC that was formed in Texas that acquired, we'll call it a piece of land, you know, and that's just it. Just Jay and Paul Co. LLC, a Texas LLC that's acquiring a piece of real estate worth $1 million, right? So sure enough, it doesn't fall under any of the exemptions. It is the absolute target of the Corporate Transparency Act. So let's draw a bit of a dividing line. You have all the pre-existing companies, and we have all new companies that are being formed after January 1st, 2024. So let's talk about Jay and Paul, Nuco. It's in January formed the new LLC. So this is a reporting entity, no exemption. So once the entity is born in Texas, so the Secretary of State says, okay, Jay Paul Co. LLC, you are in existence. A clock now begins to run. And that used to be 30 days. It was recently changed by FinCEN in early December to 90 days. We have 90 days to bring that into compliance with the Corporate Transparency Act. So first thing is, who reports? The company itself, Jay Paul Co., is the reporting entity. Not Jay, not Paul. Jay Paul Co. is the reporting entity. And once we've determined the reporting, what do we have to report to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network? We need to provide the legal name of the company and all of its DBAs. So Jay and Paul Co. doing business as Widgets R Us. All right. That Jay and Paul Co., Widgets R Us, or any other DBA, the physical address of the company. All right. Not a UPS box, not the attorney's office, not the accountant's office, the physical address of the company where that company is doing and headquartered and doing business, and the a specific tax identifying number for that company, which would either be the EIN number that we attained for Jay Paul Co. or social security numbers of its members. But let's just say, most of the time, 99% of the time, it's the EIN number. Sometimes in a single member LLC, disregarded, it could be a social security number. So all of that needs to be reported for the reporting company to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. Now the fun begins. So now we have to say, who else? Remember the goal. The goal is, who's behind the veil of the company? So the next thing is, if Harry's firm, if Barth Calderon, formed this company for you, and Cheyenne, my paralegal, went to the Secretary of State of Texas and filed the documents, she is now the reporting, the company applicant. So Cheyenne has to say that she formed this company for Jay and Paul. And whoever the supervising attorney was that supervised that also needs to report that they were the supervising attorney of Cheyenne. So that is who formed it. So LegalZoom would have to report, you know, an accountant that did it would have to report. You got to report who formed it. All right. Very important.
Wow.
Then we go in to the beneficial owners. Now, beneficial ownership needs to be reported. This is the whole purpose of the act. So in this particular case, you would say, oh, it's pretty simple. You got Jay Holstein and you have Paul Hitchcock are the beneficial owners. If you own more than 25% of the company, you are a reporting beneficial owner. With me, if you're a minor, no. All right. But if you own more than 25%, you're a reporting owner. So if it's simple, the Jay and Paul, what did Jay and Paul need to report? Okay. So we got to put it on that same thing. We got the reporting company. Now we have two beneficial owners. So we think to start, but it's going to change. So we take a look at that. And so we need to report Jay Holstein. We need to put your name and any DBAs of your name, AKAs, also known as your actual physical address that you live, and a color copy of your passport, unexpired passport, or a color copy of your driver's license. If you don't have either one of those two, a government-issued ID. All right, if we don't have a government-issued ID, we need to get one in order to report under CTA and not be in violation of the law, which is a felony. So we got to take that information for each of the beneficial owners here. Jay's 50%, Paul's 50%, and that goes on our reporting to the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. Now, there's a couple of options, all right? So one option is through, you know, you can report it yourself. We have, for example, a service that reports this. But you can also, Jay, go to the FinCEN website. We can't do this for you. We can do everything else but this. And you can open up an account, file all your documents with 15 forms of identification and two-factor authentication, and they will issue you, Jay, a number. That number is your FinCEN number, meaning all your crap is on file with FinCEN. This is your number. So we could say the 50% owner is Jay Holstein, and his number is so-and-so. So we have one option, all your stuff through the filing service, or you obtain a number. But the way to put it, they were unclear about, it's not just beneficial ownership, it's also control. So whoever controls the entity is a reporting person. So if the manager is Jay, Jay needs to report. If the manager is Jay and Paul, they need to report. If a third party company is a manager of the LLC, that third party company needs to report. In a corporate structure, all the shareholders that own 25%, all of the C-suite people, CFO, COO, CEO, need to report as well. And if there's a board of directors, all right, for that company that has the ability to change the C-suite members, the board of directors needs to report as well. I mean, it gets a little crazy.
That definitely does. And there was enough of layers in there that put back a kind of a theoretical and see if this fits.
Sure.
Let's say it's an investment LLP, and it has the benefit goes 100% towards a trust.
I'm going there.
And a control is 100% by an LLC that has no benefit. And that LLC that's in the control has various owners.
All of them need to report. Every one of them. Remember what's behind this. It's layers after layers after layers of nondescript people, literally is what they're after. If you're going to drill down through all the layers to get to the people, where do they live? And here's your driver's license. That's what this is all about. So that is a scenario they say is very complicated. So again, in corporation, we gave you a shareholder that own 25%, all the C-suite people. And then those shareholders might be other companies. So a 25% owner of the company might be another corporation. So the people in charge of that corporation are also reporting entities. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. In some cases, you can have 30 or 40 different reportings that on one particular company that recently got formed that all has to be done within 90 days. But let me cover the trust issue. That's very important. So trusts themselves are not included in this act. A trust is not a reporting entity. We don't have to, if I make a living revocable trust for you or an irrevocable trust for you or an asset protection trust for you, Jay, and I got to go, it's not filed with the state. It's not a state-created bird. It's a bird that's created by you, the trustor. it unto itself under current CTA is not a reporting entity. So if we have a living revocable trust and you have your house in it and your brokerage account in it and your bank account in it, no reporting. Change that scenario. That you have your living revocable trust, and inside the living revocable trust is Holstein Capital LLC. Okay. And Holstein Capital LLC is now a single member LLC, to which the single member is Holstein Family Trust or Holstein Irrevocable Trust. Now, since the trust owns more than 25%, the trust becomes the beneficial owner. And now we look to the trust. So the trustees need to report. The beneficiaries of the trust need to report. If there's a trust protector that was named, they need to report. And if someone holds the power of appointment to change the trustees or to change the direction of the assets within the trust, which is quite common in advanced estate planning, then the persons holding the power within the trust to make a modification also need to report.
So It sounds like the lesson learned here is the trust shouldn't own an LLC.
Well, if you don't do that, then you wind up with the trust winding up in probate, all right? And somebody dies, you got a probate problem along the way, and you don't have continuity for incapacity, but death would cause a probate on those underlying assets. So some trusts are simple, some trusts are complicated, but it's true. If you don't take, you should have the LLC inside a trust. All right, so now remember, all of this reporting, Jay, Paul, is one and done. All right, so when you form it and you finally figure out who's going to own what, who's on first, what's on second, you report it all through the FinCEN numbers and you're done. Absent changes in the future, you're done. It's not an annual reporting that has to go on along the way. So I think that it's you could say, well, do I put it in trust or not put it in trust? The trust is the beneficial owner. You report the people around the trust and you're done. But you don't have but the underlying LLC now just reports one beneficial owner, which is the trust, unless there's more than one owner.
Yeah, so, and I want to say too, if people are putting comments in the chat, feel free to add comments in there, your questions, because we're going to get to all of those. Yeah, yeah.
So that's basically, and we got 90 days to do this, Jay, from the time the entity becomes live. And then anytime there's a change, someone has a driver's license change, an address change. So we have a minor that owns 25% or a trust for minor that's not a reporting. That minor reaches the age of 18, or one of the 25% owner dies, goes through probate or goes to trust administration to the next owner. We have 30 days from the time of that event to make modifications and changes to the CTA. So
Harry, I'm going to probably be peppering you with more questions.
Sure.
So one question that just came in is 90 days starting from when?
The date that it became effective with the state.
Okay, so that's when you have...
So I filed it with Texas on today. So on January 16th, Texas sent it back to me 2 weeks later, January 28th. And January 28th, it's effective. It's 90 days from the 28th.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. Now, this is all for new entities. But that's not where the fun begins. The fund begins is for every entity that's not exempt that was formed before January 1st, 2024, every one of them need to be registered under Corporate Transparency Act, UGG. So if we have like me, I have like 12 entities, every one of those 12, the exception of my law firm, because it's over 20 employees, over 5 billion. All right. Has to be reported, and all the beneficial owners and all. And now some of this may be, first we have to determine exempt, non-exempt. Then we have to say it's a reporting company. Then we have to make sure that we have all the appropriate identifying information. Once it's a reporting company, then we have to determine all the beneficial owners and controllers, okay, and where it sits. It may be sitting in a trust that's 10 years old with some people that you don't even talk to anymore involved in the trust. and we need to get their information. So let's talk a little bit about the only thing that is not required on the pre-January 1st, 2024, company applicant. We don't need to know who the hell formed it. And so that's not required in getting that done.
I have a couple questions that are still earlier from our discussion. And sure. So let's say there's a group puts together, a general partner wants to buy a multifamily housing, and they bring in limited partners. And the value of that project is, I don't know if it matters, but let's say it's less than $5 million.
That doesn't matter. That's gross sales for a company. Doesn't matter, the value of the assets.
Okay. So in that scenario where you had a general partner and limited partners, would that be involved in this as well?
Oh, God, yes. Specifically for this. So each limited partner that owns 25% or more,
okay,
is a reporting beneficial owner. And the general partner, which is typically an LLC or a corporation, it's a reporting entity, and all of its controlling, because the general partner is the controlling member of the LP. So the general partner and all its aspects. And if that LP, for example, if you own 25% of that LP, and that 25% is in Jay's family trust, then your family trust becomes the reporting entity of that 25%.
So it's got a whole analysis.
Yeah.
So the question was asked more from the perspective of the limited. And so if the limited is less than 25%, they're off the hook.
That is correct. Unless, well, in a limited partnership, true, because in a limited partnership, by its very nature, it doesn't have any management control. They're limited partners. Now change it a little bit. Now make it an LLC.
They are beneficial. So No.
Just stay with me. Okay. The limited partners don't have a vote in management. They don't. Not an LP.
Right.
But now change it to an LLC and do it this way, that I have an LLC that I created and I bifurcated it. So I have voting interests, non-voting interests, all right? And a manager, all right? And the manager who has no interest at all, but it manages the entity, they're reporting. I now have 99% non-voting interest in the LLC and 1% interest voting in the LLC. The 1% voting interest can remove and replace the manager. The other 99 don't have a vote. So that 1% owner, which is less than 25, is a reporting beneficial owner because it has the ability to remove and replace the manager. So they drill down to get to that. So in the analysis that takes place for all the pre-existing entities, 33 million of them, you got to look at all this and you have to do an analysis. Now, the AICPA has said to all their members, and it seems to be being carried out, that the CPAs should not be involved in that because their determination was that is the unauthorized practice of law. Because it's all legal questions. Who holds power of appointment? Who's a trustee? Who's a protector? Who's a beneficial owner? You know, when do all these time limits come to play and change? I want to focus in on one thing before we get more questions. The bill that's floating through Congress is passed in the House, not yet passed in the Senate, and not signed by good old Joe yet. But here's what that did. That extended the change provision. So right now it's 30 days. You get 90 days from the inception of a new entity and 30 days for a change that has to be filed. It extends the change provision to 90 days. That's good. It's an extension. The second part of that is right now we have to bring 33 million through to FinCEN by December 31st, 2024. And on January 1st, 2025, if they're not in compliance, the $500 a day fine begins. Under the bill that's running through, it extends that to December 2025. So December 31st, 2025, which effectively gives us a couple years to deal with the 33 million entities that are out there. But it does something else, which is really weird. And it's written in grammar that virtually no one can understand. I don't know where they went to school in Congress, but whatever. And it basically said, which is really odd, that FinCEN, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, cannot even accept a application to comply with the act unless everyone and every reporting person has reported. So if you say, hey, look, we have 45 reporting people, 44 of them have, we have all the information that we need, driver's license, passports, home addresses, but the 45th is a holdout. We cannot file it. They won't even accept it. They won't look at it. So what they're basically saying is you have to get rid of the 45th person, buy them out. They could no longer have ownership of that, or your company is going to go into non-compliance and all of the fines come to play. Now, that, of course, to me, is also one of the reasons that there's some possibility of unconstitutionality. The laws are vague. The penalties are ridiculous. And the other thing, too, is an argument is that 33 million good taxpaying solid American citizens, all right, of being the burden and the cost of implementing the Corporate Transparency Act. And you think this is really going to stop terrorists, you know, terrorist financing, money laundering, the goal of it? The answer is probably not. They're going to find a way around it. They're going to do it. They'll fabricate different beneficial owners. So I don't think it's going to give the government what they want, but the burden that it places upon businesses is absolutely amazing. So
a question I was asked, and I'm not sure I understand the question well. Says, could you please provide a link to the government reporting page? And I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's the FinCEN, www.fincen.com, I believe. And Paul will send that out to everybody.
Perfect.
And, they have a small business guide that's published on their website. So for example, you got a couple things. People can look backwards on their own and look at all the entities that they have. They also have an opportunity to do a couple of other things. One, a lot of people have entities. I know I did, had a few entities doing nothing. They just sit there. I formed them years ago. I'm not using them, but I keep them up to speed. Now they become reporting entities. So if we dissolve them before we report, we don't have to report on those. So I think that's important to understand as well. So if you, it's a good, and in shareholders agreements and operating agreements and limited partnership agreements, language needs to be inserted into these documents that says, if you're going to be a limited partner in the Jay and Paul, limited partnership, when you sign, you agree to supply the necessary information to FinCEN to keep our entity in compliance with the CTA. If you do not do that, you'll be bought out, thrown out, whatever it may be, at 50% of book value. In other words, you need to put some teeth in there because they can't even accept it without that. So a
question that I think is closely related to this is, a question is asked, does every individual and or entity need to file for their own FinCEN number?
Okay. So entities don't get FinCEN numbers. The numbers are coming from the beneficial owners. So for example, I am the supervising attorney for maybe 500 entities a year. All right. I have 12 of my own companies. So rather than putting Harry Barth, my home address, and a copy of my driver's license 500 times, I have applied and have received, because I filed with FinCEN. I went on the website and filed with FinCEN, and I now have my number. So it's Harry Barth, it's 3000-0007434, whatever it may be. And that's what I have. So I don't have to put that information over and over again. I have to keep it up to speed, you know, if there's any changes. But once they have it, so I think everybody who owns a business or multiple businesses or is caught in this, the CTA should apply and get a FinCEN number. And then the next part is the analysis. In other words, for old entities, all right, new entities are easier. When a new client comes to my firm and we're making two or three new LPs or LLCs or a corporation, we just bake the cost right into our fee to make that in and bring it CTA compliant. We know we're putting it in trust. We know who owns it. We know if another company owns it. My problem is, if I have that LLC and it's owned a third by Jay, a third by Paul, and a third by Smithco LLC, all right? So now I have Jay reporting beneficial owner, if yours is in a trust, then your trust, Paul, a reporting beneficial owner, and now with Smithco, all right, LLC, I need the controlling people in Smithco LLC that control that one third interest, and that might not be so easy to get. All right. So hopefully, in the spirit of the law, all the Smithco people also have FinCEN numbers. So, like, for example, when it comes to a trust, all right, we use an asset protection trust, and we put a couple of LLCs in an asset protection trust. So what happens is that they don't care about the trust company. The trust company is an exempt financial institution. It's regulated. They care of who are the trust officers that can make a decision on Harry's trust. So let's say there are five trust officers that can make a decision on Harry's trust other than Harry. Those five are reporting. They have to put their information in the FinCEN number. So an analysis needs to take place on all the pre-existing entities as to, is it a reporting entity? And then who are the beneficial owners? Who are those in control? And sometimes that's not easy to determine. You know, is a CFO a reporting person? CEO, yes. COO, yes. You know, whoever has enough control, you'd be on the safe side, you report. And then if it's in a trust, you got to look at the trust and examine the trust of who are all of the responsible parties in the trust. The trust itself is not, but the trust became the beneficial owner because of the way it was run. So you would say, okay, well, I have seven LLCs. If I don't put them in my trust, then my trust does not become a reporting entity, but all the beneficial owners of the entities are. So that was not a bad move, Jay, but then every one of those seven LLCs could wind up in probate or surrogates court. Ugh.
Now I'm starting to jump into a couple of the group's questions. Sure. We have several members that are in the oil and gas industry. And so, for example, if they have a fleet of vehicles, they've opted to put their vehicles in a separate LLC.
It's a reporting
entity. I don't think it generates any revenue. So, tell me about what they need to do.
It's exactly what I said. So we look at that LLC and first to determine, is it a reporting entity? Oh, yes. So it doesn't fit any of the exemptions, and it doesn't fit the, you know, the 20 employees and 5 million. You know, it's an and, not an or. So it's a reporting entity. So we look at that LLC that holds the vehicles. And so who are the owners? All right. So we got to put the owners, whoever the owners are. And now the interesting part is the owner of that. Okay. So stay with me. If the owner of that entity is a subsidiary of a larger company, so you got a larger company, oil and gas company, that has over 20 employees and does over 5 million. So it's exempt. And it creates a subsidiary that holds all the vehicles or equipment or the intellectual property. Mm-hmm. Those subsidiaries are not reporting because the parent is not reporting.
Okay, that's the exact answer I was looking for.
But there's another side of it. Oh, okay. We do these too. We do these all day long. The other side of it is it's better for asset protection and a bunch of other reasons that it not be a subsidiary. So if tax law allows it, if you set up a LLC that is not owned by the parent company, but it just leases the vehicles to the operating company, which is different owners, in other words, or the same owners, but not a subsidiary, but a brother sister, then that brother sister entity is a reporting entity and needs to report its beneficial owners and control. And the control sometime of that is the exempt entity, but it's not a subsidiary. So the exempt entity becomes a reporting. It's just awful.
Yeah, that last one, I was expecting a very simple answer and we got back a very complicated answer. So that was...
Sorry. You know what they say about the Greeks, right, Jay? You don't like the message, don't kill the messenger. I didn't make this cockaball.
Oh, I understand.
Oh, boy. But I know how to decipher it, and I know how to get things into compliance. But the other thing that's really important, it's just two very important components. Important component number one is, why are we doing all this? It's noble, okay? The nobility is good business, solid business people, legal, fine. Just we need to get you into the registry so we don't have any problems. So anything that is within the reporting entity, we need to drill down the who's the human beings. That's the whole purpose of the whole thing. And then once we have the human beings, absent changes, it's one and done. Not an annual filing, no annual updates, only if there's changes. And surprisingly enough, most of the changes will many times happen because somebody moved, you know, to a different state, or somebody moved to a different address. They just got to update their FinCEN number information because the number won't change. So it's not that. So that the number stays the same. The entity doesn't have to report a damn thing, because if you know Jay with his FinCEN number may have a new address that was reported to FinCEN, and then we're all right.
I do have a couple more questions that have come in from folks that are listening in. Do self-directed IRAs that have an ownership interest in an LLC also need to report?
The answer is yes.
Wouldn't it be maybe the percentage that they have? Like if they're less than 25%?
If it's less than 25%, the ownership in an IRA LLC, then they don't have to report. It's 25% or more.
So that's the rule for them. Okay, the next one is an ESOP. Is an ESOP a reporting entity?
Well, usually there are not too many ESOPs with less than 20 employees, but let's just kind of take an ESOP unto itself. So the ESOP is a trust, all right? It's not an entity. It's a trust. The stock, the company, is whether it's the company is a reporting entity or not, all right? So the interesting component is that if you have a reporting company that has an ESOP, the ESOP itself, which is a trust, usually is a beneficial owner greater than 25%. So does the ESOP become a reporting company? The answer is God only knows. We don't know the answer to that yet. You would think that no one was greater than 25. But if you look at the ESOP collectively, but the ESOP's a trust and trusts are exempt, so it may be okay. And it's also the ESOP is a reporting entity. So it might fall under the financial organization that is highly regulated. We don't know the answer to that question. There are a lot of unanswered questions for that.
Very good. Well, we've caught up on the questions. Harry, was there some additional things that you wanted to cover that
No, not really. I think it's just important to understand that this is here and now. There are going to be some changes in it. There are a lot of unanswered questions. So if we're getting, for example, we're getting some pushback from trust companies that we use. We have both, you know, we do offshore trusts, we do foreign companies, we do offshore LLCs, we do asset protection trusts in the United States. And some trust companies, their trust officers are agreed to report. Some of them say that the trust officers themselves don't have to because the trust is an exempt entity, even though they're a beneficial owner. They're saying you look through the trust to who the beneficial owners are, and they have to report. We disagree with that because it's a question of control. If that trustee or that trustees have control over the assets that are in the trust, then the trust is a reporting entity as a beneficial owner. But there's still confusion. And because of the confusion, the penalties, the timing, the burden on business, and the not getting, which we no one feels that the benefit's going to really be there for the United States, those are all reasons that the case of unconstitutionality is moving through. But you can't, here's the words of the wise, you can't wait. All right. You can't say, well, let's wait until October and see what happens before we start doing our analysis to get it done. I think that that's a fool's errand. It's too late. It's, you know, so, and the other thing, too, is that I think it's really important because of the penalties associated with it. And God knows how they're going to register 33 million old companies in America in a year. I just don't quite know how they're going to do it. Yet they attach these egregious penalties by not doing it. I think it's really important when people do the analysis, those analysis should be done by, I think, their business law firms, the ones that are capable of doing it. You pick up attorney-client privilege, which I think is very important. And the attorneys that know how to do this, know how to look through to see who has to report so we don't run afoul of it. And then filing it, you could do it yourself, or we have a filing service, for example, that we put together that'll file everything with FinCEN, you know, so you don't have to sit there on a government website and do that for 30 or 40 things. So
I have just a quick comment, Harry. It's two things I want to ask you about. So, and Jay, you and I were talking about this earlier. So case example of a woman in Texas who is a syndicator for oil and gas partnerships. So she's raising money. all of her network, they're all filling out LLCs, completing LLCs and corporations and so forth. Those are all reporting, correct, Harry? For the
Well,
most part, could be.
you have a couple things. You have if the woman that's doing it is an SEC registered investment advisor, even though
She's
she's working in
not.
the oil and gas,
She's not.
she'd be exempt. She's a venture capital fund. She's raising money, maybe fall under that exemption. There are certain pooled investment vehicles that may fall under. It's unclear, but more likely not her entity. So, for example, law practices, medical practice, all of them are reporting entities, every one of them, if they fall within those categories. So I would imagine her business, if it's under 20 employees and under 5 million of gross sales, is a reporting entity.
And all those entities set up for the partnerships, right?
And all the LLCs are reporting.
I took Paul's question differently. What I was when he was asking the question, what I thought I heard was that it's a common practice when you do a new well, just for managing risk associated with a blowout, to have a separate LLC for that.
It's an
And
entity.
so, if there's four guys that go together on a well, each of them are going to have an LLC that is a 25% beneficial owner.
Correct.
And so, there it would be
So
reported.
the oil well, the aggregate LLC, is a reporting entity. Each of the 25% owners, those LLCs, are reporting entities. And if those entities sit inside their holding companies become reporting entities. And if those holding companies sit inside their trust becomes reporting entities. God bless America, Niagara Falls. It's crazy. It really is. It's really, really crazy. But that's exactly, at the end of the day, they don't want to know ABC Oil by XYZ Oil by, they want to know at the end, it's Jay and Paul, and here's where they live, and here's their picture. That's what they
What
want to
about
know.
franchises, Harry? I mean, I know you're advising,
Same thing.
Subway, IHOP.
Those are entities. They're just franchises, but they're entities.
They're
The
all
entities
reporting.
all reporting if they have over 20 and under 20 and under 5 million. Yes. But
Yeah.
most a lot of Vistage companies, Jay, as we both know, are over 20 employees and over 5 million. So they're not. But of course, the interesting part comes in is what happens if they were 22 and now they drop down to 18 employees. Now they become a reporting entity.
Yeah, I think most are above the 5 million
Oh no,
revenue.
this is an and though. It's not
I heard
one.
the and.
Yeah,
I
it's an
heard the
and.
and.
So
A lot of them have separate LLCs for the example I gave, vehicles. Another example could be investments. Another example could be R&D. And so I guess what I think I heard from you is, if their overarching entity is over the 5 million, then maybe they won't have to do this for their little
We gotta be careful
LLC.
there, Jay. Careful.
I said
A
maybe.
no. I want to make it clear. A
CYA, CYA.
subsidiary of an exempt entity is exempt. A sister company, which most of them, I do these all day long. Most of them are sister companies, not subsidiaries. The asset protection is better. Okay, if I bring a lawsuit to OPCO and OPCO holds a subsidiary that has IP in it, now I get my judgment against OPCO. I'm trying to drill down into the subsidiary because it's an asset of OPCO. That underlying subsidiary, if OPCO is exempt, is exempt. Most of the time, as a law firm, we would recommend to get the IP the hell out of OPCO into a separate entity that licenses it back to OPCO. That separate entity would be a reporting entity. All right. So it depends on where, if it's a baby or if it's a brother, sister, or if it's a new parent. All
Well,
right.
so we've had in my Vistage group, we've had several members that started in the area of services. They developed some software product that has a recurring revenue stream. So we have consistently recommended that they take that recurring revenue out separate from their services revenue, because whenever they do sell, it gets a better multiple. And
Absolutely.
they have set those up as subsidiaries, so they're
But
completely
if
separate.
they're subsidiaries and the parents
No.
exempt,
So they I may have said it wrong at the very end. They're independent, is what I was trying to
then
say.
they're filing entities.
Yes, that's what
Yeah,
I was trying to
because
say.
just so you file them. You just do the thing, you file who owns it, gets it into FinCEN, you're done.
Well, Harry,
Yes.
that's a big deal, Jay, Harry, because other Vistage shares said, oh, well, you know, most Vistage companies are over, you know, are exempt because of the size. But your point of the asset protection brother sister versus subsidiary is a huge deal. I mean, they
Yes.
may not be exempt at all with certain aspects of the
Well,
business.
they're not. If you do that, if you do your asset protection correctly and your estate planning correctly, they're not attached to the pet, you
Right,
know,
right.
the mothership. You've literally gotten away from the mothership. That was the right thing to do. So it's reporting, but let's not make ourselves crazy. It's a reporting entity. It's the company name, the address, and it's a Fed ID number, and it's beneficial owners. Sometimes it's real simple, two, three people, done. The one and done. Sometimes it's more complicated. Okay. And then we file it and we're done. It's okay.
Sure.
It's an additional burden, but hopefully it achieves the goals that they set out to achieve.
It's definitely it's worth the work if you want to separate different types of revenue.
Absolutely. And asset protection, not only just the revenue, to protect those assets. OpCo's got employees. OpCo's may have trucks and stuff and things that you don't want to get near your IP code or the copywritten software. You want to keep that stuff protected.
Agreed.
Great stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, awesome. I want to tell everybody thanks for being here. And again, up in the chat there, I put a link. If you want to get one-on-one complimentary assessment, happy to do it with an attorney. Click on that, fill out that form, take you 35 seconds. We'll get you connected. Jay, thank you so much for hosting this with Harry being involved. Yeah.
Once I overcame all my technical challenges, but anyway, yeah, we landed the plane fine. So thank
That's
you.
good. It's really good. All right, well, good. Jay,
Thanks,
pleasure.
Jay.
Paul, pleasure. Thank you guys so
All
much.
right,
Bye-bye.
bye. See
See
everybody.
everybody. Thanks. Goodbye.